Welcome to the Bengals Wire Podcast. I'm your host, Cameron Zargar. Today we're going to be talking about the Bengals draft picks, the ones we like, the ones we don't like so much, and the ones we don't quite understand. I'm joined by draft expert Bill Rossetti, who writes for the Bengals Wire and for the Panthers Wire, and has his own podcast, Locked On Panthers. Bill, thanks for joining the podcast today.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. Great to be here, Cameron. Really appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely going to need your help today because I don't know about half the players that the Bengals drafted, if we're being honest.
That's
here.
That's all right.
Yeah, so, Bill, let's start from the top. Billy Price. Now, I know a lot of Twitter experts, if you will, you know, the GMs and scouts on Twitter, I'm being sarcastic here, you know, they weren't very high on Price. And Ragonow was kind of the PFF darling, right? Mm-hmm. And Price was perceived to be not that athletic, you know, kind of shorter arms. And so his ceiling is somewhat low, if you will. However, he has the kind of intangibles and attitude, you know, the nastiness that a lot of people said the Bengals missed on their offensive line. And he has the attachment to Ohio. And from his perspective, he has that winning culture of Ohio State that he's going to bring. I know that bothers some Bengals fans. But but at any rate, he does have a lot of qualities. If we're talking about a Bengals franchise that has struggled with some of the intangibles or some of the, let's say, the emotional makeup of a team, Price does make a lot of sense in that regard. He's a guy who's going to come in. He can be a leader on the line. And we know he's going to be competent, which is a huge upgrade from Russell Bodine. Mm-hmm. How would you kind of grade the pick?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's definitely a guy that's going to come in and replace Russell Bodine. The nice thing about Price is he has that versatility, kind of like Ragnow and James Daniels. He started, played 3 years at guard, moved over to center for his senior year after Pat Elflein left for the NFL, which is why it was interesting seeing a lot of mocks that would have drafted Billy Price there, because then you would have had the two teammates. But, you know, the Bengals are definitely linked to Price a little bit. The steam was certainly picking up as we got closer to the draft that Ragnow was going to be the pick. So I'm sure the Bengals probably felt a little stiffed when Detroit swiped Ragnow right from under Cincy the pick before. But, you know, Billy Price is definitely a, you know, and I don't even know if I want to use the term consolation prize because of how good he is. And, I mean, he's a smart kid, too. He graduated early. And, you know, you mentioned the winning culture. Billy Price actually started 55 consecutive games, which is a record at Ohio State. So durability is definitely there. Now, he did have the injury at the combine, the pectoral issue. But his doctor had just cleared him a few days before the draft, basically saying he was ready to go. You know, and we had known even before that we felt like he was going to be available for training camp, so it wasn't going to knock him back too much. So for a team that obviously desperately needed interior help, you know, they got Cordy Glenn to play left tackle, but you really still needed someone on the interior. I still really like Billy Price. I thought he was a real good run blocker. Yeah, and this is a team that I think was dead last in terms of running the ball. So they really needed some firepower up front, especially with a guy like Joe Mixon now. We've got to get him going. So I really like the Billy Price pick. I think it's, you know, it's not a sexy pick, obviously, because offensive linemen never are, but it was the biggest need for the Bengals. And at pick 21, and again, not just being a center, but having that ability to play guard just made them that much more valuable and made it worth the pick at the top of the 20s.
Yeah, I mean, the more I think about it, I'm totally fine with the pick. You know, I think people thought the Bengals reached, but let's be honest. I mean, the way where people were drafted this year, and I mean, I'm sure that it's the case every year, we don't know as much as we think, mm-hmm. you know, whether he would have been available at 46 or, you know, 54 yep. or whatever. That's probably not the case. I mean, generally, we're not as informed as, you know, the experts. Mm-hmm.
You're right. I mean, I don't think it was a reach, number one. Number two, I don't even think he was going to be there at the Bengals' next pick, because you saw kind of the run on guards at the start of the first – or the start of the second round, excuse me. Cleveland, with the first pick of round two, took Austin Corbett. Then the Giants right behind them took Will Hernandez. And then the Colts a few picks later took Braden Smith. So, you know, based on who they picked, if these were the targets – the positional targets that these teams had and Billy Price was still there, I definitely think Price was probably going to be taken over one of those guys had he still been on the board. You know, and it's possible he may not even made it past, say, Minnesota at 30 or even Jacksonville at 29, because they had a decent enough needed guard that they could have spent the pick on Price. So to me, it's not a reach. I'm perfectly fine with Price being the pick of 21. You had to get somebody in there to help fortify that offensive line. I'm almost a little surprised. I mean, they did take a late offensive lineman, but I definitely thought there was a possibility that they could have taken a second lineman even earlier, you know, in terms of, like, say, third round or fourth round, but they didn't take another one until basically the end of the draft.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting with those second and third round picks, which I want to get to right now. Bengals went defense, even though most fans would think the defense, yeah, it had some problems. In general, the Bengals have a problem in coverage, let's say. We knew we needed an athletic outside linebacker, which we've needed for years now. But most fans were thinking, even though we got Cordy Glenn and now we got Price, so that's, you know, 40% of the starting offensive line right away. Clint Bowling is a very good that's the players that we trust in. And Jake Fisher still, he seems like he'd be a solid player. So that's, you know, four or five positions. But fans still felt like it was an immediate area of concern. And also the Bengals like Redmond. They like Christian Westerman. They like these guys, and they want to see what they have in them. They haven't gotten to play much. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with Frank Pollock, I remember those two. There were some quotes that they're excited about, kind of the opportunities they're going to get under him. So, again, this is an area where fan perception is different from the team's evaluation. And so, moving on to the second round, the Bengals got a safety, which is something that they've been targeting for the whole offseason and free agency, and none of the guys they pursued really worked out, or they didn't see them as a great fit, let's say, politically, for instance. Mm-hmm. In the case of Jesse Bates, who the Bengals took in the second round, he offers a lot in terms of coverage, because we know that Terrell Austin, the new defensive coordinator, will play three safeties, you know, as he sees fit. And Jesse Bates adds a dynamic to the group of, you know, Sean Williams and George Iloka that they didn't have before.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of Jesse Bates too myself. You know, especially, and it's funny because, you know, like you said, obviously, I cover the Panthers as well, and Bates was probably a top option for them as well. In fact, the Bengals picked Bates right before Carolina did, so I wouldn't be surprised if the Bengals, had they not taken Bates at 54, the Panthers would probably taken him at 55. He is probably one of the more pure free safeties in this class, and like you said, they definitely needed someone next to George Iloka. They needed somebody to kind of they definitely needed an upgrade on Sean Williams, and I think Bates is definitely going to be that guy. A little surprising to me that Justin Reed out of Stanford fell as far as he did, but Bates is still a guy I'm perfectly fine with. I think the value is still pretty good. I think this was a round where he was expected to go, middle to late second round, so another fine pick, I think. This is probably one of my more favorite picks, to be honest. Like I said, very, very athletic, very smart kid, you know, and not really too far. Definitely one of the leaders of the Wake Forest team and kind of helping them kind of get revitalized a little bit in terms of their football program and getting themselves back on the map. So I think Bengals fans are going to be very happy with what they're going to see out of Bates.
And I think a lot of fans are happy with the selection of Sam Hubbard as well in the third round with pick 77 overall. So they went, you know, to Ohio State again to get Hubbard. Of course, Hubbard is from Cincinnati, so this is something I'm pretty sure it's similar with other football franchises, but in the case of the Bengals, they're very much attached to players from Ohio or from, you know, schools that are close to them. And of course, Bengals fans stretch from, let's say, Kentucky to even up in mid, let's say, central Ohio, you have a lot of Bengals fans. Mm. And so Hubbard is a guy who they really like, and he's very happy. It's basically a childhood dream to be on the Bengals. What does he offer? Because I know, you know, they say in terms of athleticism, he's limited, but kind of with his quickness and his kind of refined technique, he still has a lot to offer. What do you see his ceiling as, or what do you see him being in the NFL?
Yeah, you're right. He was kind of limited. I think you kind of saw that the pro day. He posted a fairly slow 40 time, which surprised a lot of people. But I think he's just more of a quick pass rusher. We really saw it in the Rose Bowl, or excuse me, not the Rose Bowl, the Cotton Bowl against USC. He actually had 3.5 sacks and 2.5 tackles for a loss. So, you know, it's one of those kind of saving your best performance for last. You know, you have Dunlap and Michael Johnson kind of locked in there, but I think Sam Hubbard definitely will work his way into that rotation. You know, I believe both of them are in contract years now. Dunlap, I would imagine they're going to try to re-sign after the season. Michael Johnson, you know, could be a different story. But to start, I think Sam Hubbard is definitely worthy of being in that rotation, being kind of that situational pass rusher. And then, you know, as he develops, as he gets more comfortable, you could maybe see him more involved, especially in the run game. You know, that's not saying he can't stop the run, but pass rush is probably more of his game right now. I thought Hubbard had a shot to go in the first round, so I was a little surprised to see that he fell out and that he ended up falling out of the second round. You know, so for me, I thought it was pretty good value to get him kind of just outside the top 75. And with the number of picks that they had, it was kind of a, you know, you could say it's kind of a luxury pick to just kind of scoop up players. Now, the interesting thing here, too, is that, you know, between Hubbard and Malik Jefferson, would one of these picks have been Mason Rudolph had the Steelers not taken him right in front of the Bengals? I think that's, you know, I think it's a legitimate question. I think it was very possible they would have taken Rudolph had he been available. But nonetheless, they still get two very good defensive players, I think, in Hubbard and Malik Jefferson.
Yeah, I think Marvin Lewis, you know, I saw on Twitter, joked about that, actually. He said that I think he thinks their war room was tapped or mm-hmm. something, you know, the Steelers. But yeah, they probably would have taken Rudolph. I mean, they did, you know, they did get a quarterback in Logan Woodside, the 249th pick, and I think Woodside is from Kentucky, and that's kind of interesting because, you know, you think about Woodside, you think about Hubbard from Cincinnati, and then you think about Price from Ohio, and it seems like the Bengals are kind of playing politics here with their fans because, you know, essentially fans were determined to not attend games after Marvin Lewis was given an extension. And then they went out and made some, you know, splashy moves by the Bengals standards. Mm-hmm. And then they go out and get a bunch of homegrown guys, if you will. So that's kind of the way I think that Mike Brown does business. You know, he just wants to keep fans happy enough, keep them interested enough. But at any rate, yeah, they did get a quarterback. I don't know if Woodside will even end up being the backup. With Barkley already available, the Bengals tend to kind of favor veterans. And if Jeff Driskel is completely healed, they were pretty high on Jeff Driskel. So who knows about Woodside? I'm kind of jumping ahead here, but...
No, and you're right. I think it's definitely... You know, it's worth a shot in the seventh round, especially considering some of the quarterbacks that did go in front of him. Danny Etling getting drafted is quite surprising. I think that kind of broke Twitter a little bit when the Patriots made that selection. So for where he was drafted and some of the guys he was behind, even the guy like Tanner Lee, you know, it's a shot in the dark, but with the 249th pick, you know, you're basically throwing darts anyway, so it's worth a shot, especially with the fact that they had like something like 11 picks.
Just going back to the third round here, Malik Jefferson. So we talked about the need for an athletic linebacker, and he is definitely that, right? I mean, by mm-hmm. all accounts, I mean, he is. And if he can kind of, because it seems like his strengths are Burfict's weaknesses and vice versa, right? So if he can kind of learn some of the fundamentals and the instincts that someone like Burfict has, he could really add a lot to the linebacking core. Especially when Burfict comes mm-hmm. back. Yeah, so I mean, Malik Jefferson is a guy who I think... you can't really argue with that pick. I don't, you know.
No, not late third round. He's another guy that, you know, I thought could have been taken in the second round. Jefferson kind of had an up-and-down career. You know, he started out pretty well. Then in 2016, he kind of dipped down a little bit. Got himself back up in 2017. Was actually co-defensive player of the year. In the Big 12. So you're right. I think, especially with Burfict being suspended for the first four games, you know, you very well could see Jefferson in the starting lineup to start. And then it's possible he could carve out a role even after Burfict comes back. You know, I know they kind of like Nick Virgil as well. And obviously they signed Preston Brown in free agency to kind of man the mic. So it'll be really interesting once Burfict comes back, how the Bengals kind of work all those linebackers together, and you know who ends up playing on the outside, because Brown is probably gonna man the middle, but you know, you're right, Malik is a guy that can probably work outside, so he's definitely gonna be one of the intriguing guys as far as where Terrell Austin tries to fit him.
Yeah, well, speaking of working out where guys belong, the next two picks the Bengals took kind of raised some eyebrows for some Bengals fans, because Mark Walton is a running back, and the Bengals have two running backs who they want to use. Mm-hmm. Joe Mixon had, maybe not statistically, but you know, the eyeball test proves that he had a very successful rookie mm-hmm. year, considering the line he was running behind. And Gio Bernard, who is still pretty explosive. Mm-hmm. You know, he's still, I think, you know, maybe 26. He's not that old. And he's recovered well from his injury. And they drafted a guy who's similar to Gio and Mark Walton. And then with the 151st pick, and then with the 170th pick, they took two cornerbacks, even though they already have three, let's say, starting corners in Drake Kirkpatrick, William Jackson III, and Darquez Dennard. So a lot of people are thinking, well, maybe this is too many cornerbacks. Maybe we don't really need to draft a running back. You know, they had Brian Hill, who looked okay, and he looked pretty good in the preseason. He looked okay in his limited time. So Bengals fans are kind of nervous. You know, why aren't we going after players who can fill needs now? You know, are we really trying to win now or not? Mm-hmm. Do you see it that way, or?
I see it as possibly looking ahead. You know, it definitely makes you wonder what the future is of some of these corners. Obviously, William Jackson is kind of locked in for a little bit, but Darquez Dennard is entering a contract year. Drake Kirkpatrick, they can save, I believe, $7 million or $4 million. It was one of those.
Well, just to kind of comment on that. Yes, that would make sense if it were any other franchise, but that's generally not how the Bengals fund.
Mm-hmm.
If there's like even a decent amount of guaranteed money, by that I mean like more than $800,000, the Bengals are not cutting someone. I mean, it's very rare that they'll cut someone with any money left. Mm-hmm. And it's also kind of how they get away with not giving guaranteed money, is by like there's this kind of implied condition that, you know, you will see the end of this contract. And they drafted Dre. I mean, that's kind of, you know, when they draft someone, they kind of have a certain affinity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I agree with you. They should move on from Dre. I mean, if he performs at the level he did last year, he was, you know, I don't know, he was one of the, he wasn't even average. You know, $10 million a year for below average corner, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at his contract numbers right now. He would have a cap hit of $11 million in 2019, so they would actually save almost $7 million in cap space, because they still have his signing bonus that they would eat if they cut him in 2019, which is over $4 million. But again, that's a cap savings of almost $7 million. Of almost $7 million.
If it were the Patriots, they would do it, you know. If it were a franchise that's, you know, set on putting the best product on the field, they'd do it. But Mike Brown doesn't make cheese like Bob Kraft. I mean, he doesn't have the cheese.
But I mean, going back to the two corners, Darius Phillips to me is probably going to make his money more on special teams. He was actually a two-time special teams player of the year in the MAC. Actually holds the FBS record with 12 run backs for a touchdown. In other words, we're not just talking on special teams, but on defense as well, because he ended up with 5 career pick sixes. I believe he had 5 kickoff returns for a touchdown, and then he also had a punt return and a fumble return for a touchdown, and four of his kickoffs were 100 yards. So, like I said, I think that's and Alex Erickson obviously had a great season for them returning the football, but he's another guy that's entering a contract year. I think Darius Phillips kind of has the speed. He didn't test as well as some people would like. That probably caused him to slip a little bit. Maybe the outside, maybe a better combine maybe would have put him in the top 150. Excuse me. But he still ended up at 170. But like I said, I think that's going to be, at least to start, that's kind of going to be his game in the NFL is as a return man. I wouldn't be surprised to see him kind of become the lead dog right away
Yeah, I mean that's yeah, I mean they need
in the
that
league.
after, you know, not exercising their option on Pac-Man Jones, on Adam Jones. So yeah, I mean you're right. I mean he'll probably make the roster in that regard. I mean Alex Erickson, like you said, had a good year, but he didn't, you know, he had a nice average, but he didn't really, he's not the kind of guy who you're really worried about taking it to the house that often. Yeah, so another guy that they drafted that kind of was a little bit confusing was, I mean, it's in the seventh round. I mean, it's their last pick, but Auden Tate, and he looks pretty good when you look at his film. I mean, he's got a big body. He looks like a nice end zone target. However, the Bengals have been kind of stockpiling these kind of players the past few drafts, with, you know, Cody Kore, and then Josh Malone last year. These guys barely see the field as is, and they still got to work John Ross into the rotation. They kind of got to get, you know, Tyler Boyd's confidence back. I mean, we know he can play. You know, we know he can be a third, let's say at least a fourth receiver. He can be a guy who can contribute, you know, 400 to 500 yards if you know how to use him right. So, really, I mean, like you said, I mean, in terms of special teams, but Auden Tate is not the kind of guy you're going to put on special teams. So it's kind of confusing, unless they just like to, they want to take a chance and see, maybe we'll find the, you know, the guy to start across from AJ Green if we keep taking these chances on these kind of bigger receivers who they like. You know, Green himself is pretty big. I don't know. I didn't really understand their thinking there.
Yeah, I mean, and you're right. Tate is your classic red zone target, 6'5", 228, but he only ran a 4.68 40 at the combine, and that had to have crushed him. Production wise, he wasn't terrible at Florida State. He did haul in 10 touchdown passes, basically playing with a backup quarterback after DeAndre Francois was injured in the season opener against Alabama. And there was obviously a varying degree of opinion in terms of Tate's abilities and his scouting reports. Some love his route running, some don't necessarily like his route running. He seemed to be kind of a really up and down debated prospect. It is a little surprising. I thought maybe he would have gone a little bit higher than this. He basically almost went undrafted. What th only three picks from the end, Audentate gets drafted. But you're right. I mean, looking at the roster now, with AJ Green, with Brandon LaFell, and they want to try to get John Ross involved somehow. I mean, you spent a top 10 pick on him last season. You don't really want to give up on him so quick. Injuries were really the only reason that his rookie season was kind of ruined. So they got to try to get his confidence back up. So, you're right. Thinking about it more, it's like, where does Tate fit? Or does he even make the roster? Because it's a fairly loaded group right now at the receiver position. So,
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like it's loaded, in the sense that they have a lot of guys who are
And
unknowns.
it's
I
like
mean, it's not
crowded
like a
too, yeah.
talented. Yeah, I imagine, people probably rank them, even though they have AJ Green around the middle, maybe even lower of the best, receiving cores in the NFL. But they could end up being top 5 or 10, honestly, with, if John Ross plays to what we thought he was and all that. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's just they just have all of these guys who they really don't know where they fit or what they can do yet. There were flashes. I mean, all these guys kind of had flashes. Cody Kore hasn't really done much in games, but he's shown the ability to get open deep, in the preseason and even in the regular season. I saw a couple of times he got open and Dalton, couldn't hit him. Josh Malone, he had a nice big touchdown in the regular season. I mean, these guys have showed flashes here and there. And like I said, Tyler Boyd. I mean, Tyler Boyd's not a game breaker, but he's done. He had a nice rookie year. He had a pretty good rookie year. Of course, he had a lot of targets with all the injuries, but he had a good rookie year. So yeah, that's hard to question his seventh round pick. But well, right before Tate, the Bengals did address an area of need, but I don't know if this will satisfy anyone. They took Rod Taylor from Ole Miss. And Taylor, kind of, he's listed at tackle, but he's probably not big enough to play tackle in the NFL. You can probably inform us more about that. But and he's set to have some maturity issues, which doesn't seem like a problem for Marvin Lewis in general. He kind of thinks he can fix those. So, what do you think of that pick, number 252?
Yeah, I mean, didn't really get a chance to see a whole lot of Rod Taylor, so I'm just kind of checking him out real quick. He does have a little bit of experience at right guard from what I'm seeing. And you're right, it sounds like, and I believe he was announced as a guard. He mostly played tackle at Ole Miss, but you're right, I think he's gonna project inside. He does have a good size at 6'3", 6'3", 320, but that's probably more inside rather than playing a tackle. So guard is likely, and again, he does have experience playing at guard, so that definitely helps. But you're right. I think from what I've been checking out, the Some of the issues are definitely well known, and that definitely has to be addressed. The maturity issues for sure. So, you just have to hope that a guy like Marvin Lewis can kind of get through to him and kind of get him on the right track, especially now that he was drafted in the NFL. So, and being so close to being undrafted though, but he was still drafted. So hopefully he can kind of use that as motivation to kind of get his head on straight, because again, there's definitely some spots for the taking, even just as like depth guy. So he has to come in, he has to compete, he's obviously not guaranteed anything. So again, I think that has to be some kind of motivation to say, hey, let me kind of grow up. I'm here in the NFL. I want to stick on this team. So I just got to go out and do what I can to show these guys that I'm past those maturity issues. I'm focused on football. I'm ready to compete for a starting job or at least a backup spot. Even just a spot on the 53, not necessarily a spot on the 46.
Yeah, I mean, I think this pick, one thing that a message that kind of sends is that the Bengals like the alignment that they already have. I mean, they wanted to keep Bodine. They made that pretty clear. And so now they don't have Bodine. Like, okay, we need to replace Bodine. That's fair. They draft Billy Price. But the rest of the line, like I said, Fisher, Westerman, Redmond, it seems like they want to see what they have in those guys. And I don't have a problem with that, to be honest with you. I mean, I think those guys actually looked good, except Fisher. He's played a lot, but the other two looked good. Even they only saw action like a game or two, but they looked good in those that limited time. So maybe I'm an optimist, but I'm fine with that. But this just kind of shows the Taylor pick, taking their second offensive lineman so late, even though last year, so obviously the biggest weakness on the team was offensive line. It kind of says something about their confidence in their own roster.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like you said, the fact that they went so long between taking offensive linemen, and neither guy they took really projects. Obviously, Billy Price is inside, and Rod Taylor projects inside. So the fact that they didn't even draft a tackle, you're right. I think that kind of shows how they feel right now. I think they definitely want to get one more look at those two in Cedric Abuehi and Jake Fisher, really kind of see what they have before maybe making the decision in 2019. So it's definitely very telling that it was what, their 10th out of 11 picks or something like that, like 5 picks before Mr. Irrelevant.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of people thought 11 picks, oh, we're just gonna draft, four or five linemen at least to.
And they only took two,
But
yeah.
yeah, I mean, but that's also the nature of the Bengals, not giving up on Oboye at this point, unless you move, change his position. It's kind of illogical because he hasn't shown anything at tackle, at left tackle at least so far. But that's the way the Bengals are. They're stubborn. Like if they believe in someone, they believe in them basically until the end, until it's like. They kind of hinted that they're frustrated or that, that a way he didn't work out. I mean, the Cordy Glenn trade was a, great
I mean,
example
that
of
pick was
that,
a
but
reach to begin with. The kid was
yeah.
coming off a torn ACL. Never really should have been the pick at 21. And he kind of
Yeah.
compound the problem by taking Jake Fisher right after that.
Right. But so I want to move on to the only guy we didn't talk about, pick 158. That's Andrew Brown, who's listed as a tackle. And I think he played defensive end at Virginia. Is that right?
He did. He played a
Yeah.
lot of five tech at Virginia.
Right. And but he's more of a tackle in the NFL, which is good. I mean, that's what the Bengals have not found an interior defensive lineman to pair alongside Geno Atkins for years. And if they could do that, there's no telling what Geno Atkins could accomplish, really. And I mean, then you have Dunlap, and then you have Carl Lawson on the edge. So if they can find a competent defensive tackle, because they've tried a lot of guys there. They've tried, most recently was Ryan Glasgow. They tried, who have they tried in recent years? Marcus Hardison, I don't think he ever made the final roster, but Andrew Billings, Brandon Thompson, I think.
Yeah, I remember when Billings was supposed to be like a high pick. We were all
Yeah.
surprised when he dropped so low, and
We
then
kind of saw
I
why.
guess we saw why, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Terrell Austin is pretty good when it comes to developing players. Like, yeah, and so he was successful in Detroit in taking guys that weren't highly touted and turning them into good players. So who knows what he can do with this group. But at any rate, the Andrew Brown pick, that was an area of need as well. Like, a lot of people thought the Bengals might go defensive tackle in the first round. Maurice Hurst was another of those guys that everyone thought would go in the first round. Ended up with the Raiders, I think, in the fifth round.
140.
So the Bengals, it's hard to grade this draft, to be honest with you, because so much of it, like you said, is with an eye to the future. And so much of it is just conservative. Like, it's the Bengals, you know, adding depth, or the Bengals kind of having a backup plan at certain positions. They're the only person we know that's going to start the entire year is, you know, probably Billy Price. I mean, I guess, you know, Jesse Bates will get on the field a lot as a safety.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Bates is a day one starter, too.
And Jefferson, Malik Jefferson, will definitely see time. Well, I can't say definitely. It's the Bengals. They're really hesitant to play rookies. But he should see time at least during the Burfict suspension, hopefully after as well.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, Darius Phillips maybe returning kicks, right?
Yeah. And then I could definitely see, you know, he may not be a starter right away, but I can definitely see Andrew Brown kind of spelling in there quite a bit.
Yeah.
He's gonna be a chance to see him.
Yeah. I mean, they don't have anybody else that's really they're attached to at defensive mm-hmm. tackle next to Atkins. So they're going to give Glasgow another shot probably. But and who knows? I mean, you know, Billings was coming off an injury. Maybe a year of experience. He'll hit mm-hmm. his potential. But yeah. So let's say three or four starters and then a good number of guys that, you know, have some upside. You know, Devontae Harris could end up being a starter one day, for instance.
Yeah, and I mean, and we really didn't touch on Harris, too. I mean, I'll just touch on him quick. But, you know, FCS player, but a very good FCS player. You know, one of the top players in the Missouri Valley Conference. I think he was one of the leaders, too, in terms of tackles. For Illinois State, you know, pretty speedy guy, a little small, but definitely brings speed. So, you know, definitely a guy that I think could potentially play nickel for them. So he's going to be another intriguing one to watch, I think. You know, may not start right away, but I think he could be one to watch.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Dre's got the starting job this year, like we said, because of his cap hit. That just kind of dictates mm-hmm. the number of snaps he's going to get.
Right.
But if Harris, you know, if he really shines, who knows? Maybe they move on Dre a little bit earlier than expected. We'll have to see. But Bill, I really appreciate you being on the show and giving us insight into a lot of players that, like I said, I don't even know who they were. What would you give your as a grade for this draft?
I'd probably give it a B. You know, you got some solid starters in there. You know, and grading drafts is always tough, obviously. But I think, you know, I'd say it's a little better than average. So I'd say about a B. You know, their first two picks are definitely two very good players. Two guys that I became pretty high on. Billy Price, I definitely became a fan of. And Jesse Bates kind of caught my eye later in the process. You know, we'll say the amount that I liked them kind of grew as we got closer to the draft and the more I got to see him a little bit. And again, Hubbard and Jefferson, two solid guys. So it's pretty solid. Like I said, like we talked, you probably have at least three starters to start and then a rotational guy in Hubbard. And then the rest of it is just kind of filling in spots where it need be, because I mean you had so many picks. You know, there's a chance that some of these guys may not even make the roster. You know, we talked about Auden Tate; he may not even make the roster. Rod Taylor has to get his
act together,
his head on straight.
Yeah.
So,
I think B is fair. Yeah, Bengals fans are attached to the draft because we don't do a lot of free agency, but we kind of did something in the offseason with the Glenn trade, and we added Preston Brown, and we already had a pretty talented roster, just needed a little bit fine-tuning. I mean, other than the offensive line, obviously.
And hot take, they may have gotten a better quarterback and better value than what we essentially helped Buffalo get.
Yeah.
Since that trade effectively helped Buffalo get Josh Allen, who, oh, by the way, is not worth a 7th overall pick and doesn't really fit what Buffalo does. So that'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Allen pick is interesting because I think it means McCarron's going to actually get a decent opportunity because – if they drafted Allen, from what I know of him, they're not planning on throwing him into the fire. You know, he's got a...
Nor they shouldn't.
Yeah. I mean, I think Allen is just too attractive in terms of that, you know, kind of Drew Bledsoe, Jeff George. I don't want to compare Drew Bledsoe to Jeff George. Drew Bledsoe was a good quarterback. But those kind of guys, they're always going to blow away scouts, and then he had mobility, much more mobility and ability to throw on the run than those guys. So physically, he was just too enticing for, you know, seven teams to pass on. But yeah, so that is our draft coverage, and we'll try to get Bill on the podcast as often as we can to talk draft picks and other analytical approaches to football. And that's it for the Bengals Wire podcast. Make sure to subscribe if you liked what you heard and leave a 5-star review. And to check out Bengals Wire and to check out Bill on Bengals Wire and on Panthers Wire. We'll see you next time.